Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yuma Samech Zayin 67. Deep appreciation to the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. The learning we do is Lezecha Nishmas Lois Lupin. The Gemara is a continuation from yesterday's daf, where we started discussing the Sir Mishalech. The goat's going to be sent off the cliff. So first of all, Vidui. There is a confession that's done over the goat, as we've discussed already. The goat serves as a kapara for Klal Yisrael, for Shar Averos, for all the other Averos. What Averos are covered by the Seer Lashem. So the Gemara points out, so that is Tumas Mikdash VeKadashav, the fact that we possibly walked into the base of Mikdash while Tamei, so for that the Seer Lashem will cover. In terms of the Seer Mishalech, the goat that's going to be thrown off the cliff, so to that, the Gemara says there's going to be Shar Averos that will cover all the other Averos and provide a kapara for all the other Averos. What about the Kohanim? So as we point out a number of times, the Machlokas. Machlokas is exactly where they're getting a kapara from. Either they're getting a kapara from the Seer Mishalech as well, which is the opinion of Rav Yehuda, which the Gemara notes. The Mishnah, yesterday's daf, doesn't seem to be going like Rav Yehuda, but that's debatable. So, but Rav Yehuda says that the Kohanim as well get a kapara from the Seer Mishalech, and another Tanaim disagree, and they say no, that the Kohanim get their kapara for Shar Averos, for all the other Averos, from the bull of the Kohen Gadol. Okay, that's the. But in the meantime, however, the Mishnah yesterday spoke about the vidui of the Seer Mishalech and ultimately the sending it out. There was a ramp, the Mishnah points out, the ramp was made, it was constructed, because the Bavliim, which we'll describe in just a moment, the Bavliim would sit there and try to pluck out the hair of maybe the Kohen, maybe the goat, and in order to try to get it to move even faster, because the goat is a scapegoat, it does have all the Averos attached to it, and the sending it off the cliff somehow provides a kapara, and so they want to make it move even faster, so in order to avoid any type of badgering, so they made a ramp so that the Kohen, or whoever's walking the Seer Mishalech to the cliff, could walk unobstructed. Does it have to be a Kohen who's walking the goat off the to the cliff? So the Mishnah pointed out yesterday, no. Doesn't have to be a Kohen, but the Kohanim got a little territorial over this particular mitzvah, and the Kohanim, the Mishnah told us, the Kohanim didn't allow others to do it, but there was one person identified who was a non-Kohen, his name was Arsala, who was involved in the sending away of the Seer Mishalech, but it's Ish Iti, could be anybody. Another halacha that we went over yesterday, the Torah says the words Ish Iti, Ish means it doesn't have to be a Kohen, and Iti, the Gemara says, is that it's done even on Shabbos, it's done even in the state of Tumah. So it means on Shabbos, you can violate Isuri Shabbos in order to send the goat over the cliff. Now the Gemara notes, now Yom Kippur seemingly has the same halacha as the Shabbos, so why we needed Shabbos and Yom Kippur to coincide, and what exactly were we adding to the dimension of Yom Kippur by adding Shabbos? So the Gemara discussed that yesterday. But in the meantime, however, you could violate Shabbos. They asked Rabbi Eliezer a whole series of questions. Rabbi Eliezer didn't answer any of those questions. In fact, he ducked, he avoided all the questions. Why? The Gemara tells us Rabbi Eliezer refused to say anything that he did not hear in the name of his Rebbe. Rabbi Eliezer would say nothing innovative, nor would he try to formulate anything without first hearing it from his Rebbeim. So when asked a question, like the discussions that we had, can a person carry the Seer HaMishalech? Can the person himself take in a state of Tumah? Etc., etc. So he just ducked all the questions. His response to any of those questions was basically, let's divert the discussion to another area so I don't have to come and ask the question. And we were involved in that yesterday. We're going to continue in the Gemara. Lo mibnei, right in the middle of the Amud, just to summarize Rav Eliezer's general position, Asamech Vav Amud Beis, Lo mibnei sheif ligman dvarim ela mibnei shelo amar dava shelo shama mipi rabba me'olam. This is the last thing we ended off with yesterday. He would not say anything unless he heard it directly from his Rabbi. Shala isha chachma asked Rabbi Eliezer. Very wise woman asked Rabbi Eliezer the following. Me'achar shemaisa egel shavim. Maisa egel, coming up in just a few short parshas from this week. This week we're up to Yisro. So Maisa HaEgel. So you know, they all violated Maisa HaEgel, and Lechor, ostensibly, they should all meet the same punishment, and they don't. Ma Ein Misas and Shava. However, they didn't all die the same. Some died. So right, you take a look at Rashi. Right, Maisa HaEgel Shavan, Avodah So Shavan Le'isr Mimnei Ma Ein Misas and Shavan Shayu Bo Shalosh Misos. So Rashi points out that three ways they died by Maisa HaEgel. Rashi points out. Misa Sayef, Simu Ish Charval, right? The Rashi has the word Chavro. Okay, we'll switch it around. So anyway, so some of them died by the sword. Misos Magefa, Vayigof Hashem Asa'am, some died by plague. And then Misos Hidarkon, and some died with a terrible illness. Dechziv Vayazar Apnei HaMayim. Right, remember he ground up the eagle into sawdust, into dust, and he poured it on the water and had him drink it much like a sota drinks. Vayamina B'Mesechet Avodah Zarah, Lo Niskav Moshe Ela Lebot Kam Kisotos. Rashi quotes the Gemara Avodah Zarah. The Gemara Avodah Zarah says that's exactly the point. They drank it like a sota drink it. Well, we're not sure, and so they're going to drink, and that'll clarify, and anyone who did in fact be over to Avodah Zarah will have his stomach blow up. Anyway, but the question the woman asked Rabbi Eliezer is, I understand, it's all Avodah Zarah. Why don't they all get the same treatment? Why don't they all punish the same? That was his question. Rabbi Eliezer, Kedarko Bakodesh, in his way, does not answer the question. In fact, he changes the subject. So Amar La, he says to her, "Ein chachma l'isha ela bepalach." You know, the wisdom of a woman is with the knitting and the crocheting and okay. V'cheinu Omer, and the pasuk says, "Kadosh Baruch Hu has a great way of looking out for me." As a general, you should know. In fact, the pasuk says that the wise women, so they spun. Fine. So, in other words, so he didn't want to answer the question. Okay. So now, although right, the Gemara asks a question, Rav Elazar doesn't want to give an answer, but the Gemara does. The Gemara is interested in answering this question. So Itmar Rav Halevi. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Halevi. Chanamar. So one explains like this. Yivech v'kiter b'saif. So if you were actively involved in the service of the Avodah Zarah, in this case, the Egel HaZahav, so b'saif. Okay, so that's the punishment that's meted out for someone who's over the Avodah Zarah. Gafa v'nishek. If you kissed the Avodah Zarah, so b'misa. So there you get misa b'dei shamayim, meaning that is not a capital crime that's corporally punished. That's not subject to based in punishment. In other words, you're showing a tremendous amount of affection, but just as a technicality, you didn't actually violate Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah has to be done with an actual service, an Avodah. And so kissing is obviously, that's certainly an affront to Kadosh Baruch Hu, but that's not Avodah per se. So there, Misa B'dei Shamayim. And Samech B'libo, B'vavo. Now what if you're just happy? Meaning you didn't do anything actively. You didn't do an avoda, you didn't do an actual service, nor did you kiss the Avodah Zarah, but you were really happy. Meaning the worshipping of the Avodah Zarah is something that made you happy. So Behid Darkon, so that's the Sota. That's somebody who then has going to drink the quote-unquote, the Mesota, and receive the punishment through the drinking of the Mesota. V'chan Amar. Okay, so that's one approach. Okay, so basically, depending on your level of involvement, so if you were actively involved with an avoda, so you received the regular Mises based in. If you were actively involved, but not with a regular service, you just kissed it, so there you're going to get Misa B'dei Shamayim, and then just a regish, a feeling, so then you drink the Mesota and your stomach blows up. Now the other approach is Edom Asra B'sayif. If you have Edom and you have Asra, and there was a warning, and they went through all due process, so then subject to death through the sword. Edom below Hasra, if there are Edom, but there is no Hasra'a, b'misa, so then it's Misa B'dei Shamayim, because obviously without a warning, so that means that there was no due process, and therefore you cannot get a corporal punishment. And lo Edom below Hasra, if there was no witnesses and there was no warning, b'hidroken, so then you drink the quote-unquote the Mesota, and your stomach blows up. Anyway, so but again, the same basic idea, is that the more that Beis Din can punish, they will, and the less that Beis Din can punish, so then it'll be left up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I'm Rav Yehuda Shifto Shalevi Lo Avad Avodas Kochavim. What about the Shevet Levi? Shevet Levi wasn't involved. Shenemar Vayamar Moshe Bashar Machane V'chule. Right, Mila Hashem Eli, and the Levim come as a sign of support for Moshe. Yosef Ravina V'kamer Lashmaita Isve Bnei Rav Papi Bar Abba L'Rav Yanai. So Levi wasn't involved. The Sheva Levi wasn't involved. And what do you do with the pasuk in Vezos Abracha? The pasuk says, "Amar la'aviv u'limo lo reisiv." They said, meaning Sheva Levi, look, if we have to stay, if we have to punish, we'll punish, and even if it means our brethren, we'll do it. Well, what do you mean, brethren? Meaning literally brethren. Well, I understand. Isn't it all of Sheva Levi that wasn't involved? So how could they be meaning any punishment against their brothers? So the Gemara says, Aviv, Avi Imo mi Yisrael, and Achiv, Achiv me Imo mi Yisrael. So the Gemara puts together different types of familial relationships where it could be your brother, but not part of the same Shevet. My brother, but not a tribe's allotment in terms of tribes. So it could be that we're brothers through a mother. Right. Brothers through mother. That's what I was looking for. Brothers through mothers, but through different fathers. Okay, and obviously tribe follows father, not mother. So it could be that he's my brother, but we share different fathers. So therefore, we're a different shvatim. So Sheva Levi doesn't. It's not Ovid Avodah Zarah. My brother from the other Shevet. So he did. He was Ovid Avodah Zarah, and therefore deserves Misa. And Banav Bnei Beis Ami Yisrael. And children, in other words, how could they have a child who's not a member of Sheva Levi? So, Bnei Bito Mi Yisrael. So it could be that it's a grandchild where it was my daughter's son, but my son-in-law was not from Bnei Levi. Okay, so that's how you understand the pasuk in Vezos Abracha. So in other words, there was no nepotism shown by Sheva Levi. Even if they have to do din on family members, they'll do it. And what about the fact that Sheva Levi as a Shevet was an Ovid Avodah Zarah? So it's possible to construct family members who are not from your Shevet. V'kevesh asulo amar rabba b'brachana lo bavlim havu. Ela alachzandrim hayu. So first of all, the Mishnah says the bavlim. They were the ones that were prodding and poking and pulling out hair in order to get the Sila Zezel moving. So the Gemara points out that even though the Mishnah describes them as Bavlim, they weren't Bavlim, but rather they were Alexandrium. But there was such a strong hatred for the Bavlim, so they called them Bavlim, meaning anyone we don't like was just simply referred to as Bavlim. Time Rav Yehuda Omer lo Bavlim hayu Alexandrium hayu. So they weren't Bavlim, but rather they were Alexandrium. Amar lo Rav Yosi, Tanuach zadchashi nachta dati. So Rav Yosi says, okay, I'm relieved. Meaning, as Rashi points out, he himself was a Bavli, right? Mishpachto Aisami Bavel, Vayakashalo Hadavar. And every time you speak poorly about a Bavli, so really it broke him and it made him feel terrible. Now that he knows that they weren't really Bavlim, they were Alexandrium Tanuach Dati. Okay, now I'm appeased. If you think about this, Rashi, you realize that I don't quite understand because, let's be honest, meaning the reason why they called them Bavlim is because they had such a contempt for the Bavlim, so they called them Bavlim. So Rav Yossi says, oh, now I feel better because they're not really Bavlim. Okay, but still, the Mishnah is showing a contempt for the Bavlim, so it's still kind of hard to understand how that pacified him, how that made him feel better. Tovit say, Tana Masha Haitzipori Dain, V'chovi Dari Segiin. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. The Braisa speaks in Aramaic, but it's quoting a phrase, a statement. So this seer, this goat, chovidara segin, it's carrying a lot of our obligations. Meaning it's burdened, it's weighed down by all of our averos. So let's go. Let's move along. Okay, and maybe the Braisa has explained the word tol. Tol means literally to pick it up. In other words, because it's so heavy, it's so weighed down by all of our obligations. Okay, Adkan, we start now with the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah is going to actually take us geographically from Yerushalayim to the cliff. Now, in terms of geography, I don't know. Meaning, I will explain the Mishnah in terms of linear distances, but in terms of actual direction and actual geography and where is the cliff, I don't know. And it's just a very honest admission on my part. I literally do not know. All I know is distances, because that's what the Mishnah is going to provide, and that's what the Gemara is going to provide. So I can talk in terms of linear measurement, but I cannot help you in terms of giving you like a tour of Yerushalayim and telling you exactly where this cliff is. So you go to the first sukkah. Okay, we're not talking sukkahs right now. We're talking literally hut, meaning that there were stations to get from Yerushalayim to the first station, from the first station to the second station. Now, everyone understand over here, this is going to be a hike. And this is a serious hike for the Ish E.T., for our man who is escorting the goat to the edge of the cliff. What we're about to learn in the Mishnah is that's a total 12 mil. Just for the purposes of us visualizing and helping us relate to how long it is, every mil is 2,000 amas. 2,000 amas is approximately 4,000 feet. The way I say it, and it's not because it's accurate, but just it's a good way to think about it, is that basically a mil is a kilometer, approximately. Right? A kilometer is 0.6 of a mile. So a mile is, okay, it's 4,000 feet is not exactly 0.6 of a mile, but just it helps. It helps to see it.
9 miles.
So we're talking about something like something to the tune of 12 kilometers. 12 kilometers to get from Yerushalayim to the edge of the cliff. Now you're making that trek, A, in the hot, the hot summer. It's the end of the summer. It's the beginning of the fall.
Fasting.
You're fasting. You're not eating. You're not drinking. And you're about to walk 12 kilometers. And in other words, we're asking a lot from this guy. And let's now put on our halachic thinking caps. And also, you're walking outside of Tchum. Now, as we pointed out in yesterday's daf, that's fine. Meaning you're Michal Shabbos, Michal Yontif, for the purposes of throwing it off the cliff. That we do. Ishiti, Afil B'Shabbos, Afil B'Tumah. But let's understand, though, the person is walking outside of Tchum. Tchum only allows you to walk 2,000 amas beyond. So here you're walking, and 2,000 amas is 1 mil. And this guy's about to walk 12 mil. So fine, so he walks beyond Tchum. That you're allowed to do. Now, a marathoner is not a terrible way to think about it. So you know how the marathoner, so he's got people along the side. Sometimes they walk him, sometimes they cheer him on, sometimes they even offer him a drink. So in this vein, same thing with our Ishi-T. The Mishnah is going to describe him. We're going to see it together in the Gemara. How basically people are literally escorting him, carrying him as far as they can carry, escorting him as far as they can escort him. Now everyone else involved is not going to go walk beyond Tchum, which is then going to be, and that's going to be a neat trick, meaning how are you going to be able to escort him? He can walk beyond Tchum, but you, the escorter who's going to walk alongside him, can't walk beyond Tchum, so stay tuned. We're going to discuss that in just a moment. And did I just mention that they're going to offer him food and drink? That's a little bit strange. It is Yom Kippur. Okay, well, that is a little bit strange, and yes, I'm right. They offered him food and drink. Okay, we'll discuss that as well. Okay, no. No, I don't think so. The goat, we pointed out, we carry the goat if necessary. So Miyakir Yerushalayim Havu Malavino, so at Sukkah Rishonah, so the dignitaries of Yerushalayim, we're starting with the Mishnah, we're in the bottom of Samach Vav Amid Beis, so they would be Malavino, they would escort him until Sukkah Rishonah, until the first Sukkah. Esther Sukkahs Yerushalayim Be'at Sok. There were a total of 10 Sukkahs from Yerushalayim until Sok in Tisham Ris, and it was 90 Ris. Now Ris is not a term that you're familiar with, it's not a linear measurement that you're familiar with, that's fine. I don't know where else we have the term Ris mentioned as a linear measurement. To help us to see a little bit better, 7.5 Ris is equivalent to 1 mil. Okay, so when are these Ris units used elsewhere in Shas? I can't think of another place, but that doesn't mean anything. It just means I can't think of another place. So Tishim is Shiva Mechzel Chomil. There's 7.5 Ris to every mil. So the math is very simple. So if it's a total of 90 Ris, and it's 7.5 Ris per mil, so take 90 divided by 7.5, and that gets you a total of 12 mil. So, umechzel chomel. Akol sukkah v'sukkah omrim lo, hare mazon v'hare mayim. And then when he gets to every station, so they say to him, here's food, here's drink. Umalavno somi sukkah l'sukkah, and they walk him from one sukkah to the next sukkah. Chutz me'acharon shebahem. Except for the last one. So in other words, you see how we're doing this? In other words, every person basically stationed at a sukkah. Now, I say one person, it could be a group of people. Right? Let's not limit it to just one. But we basically have a group of people stationed at every sukkah. Now, if their station is at the sukkah, that means going into Yom Kippur, they started at the sukkah. So that means that for them, that sukkah is going to be their point of center. Now, we know when it comes to walking on Shabbos and on Yom Kippur, so you can only walk 2,000 amas in every direction. So this is now perfect. So the way we have it now is that it's 1 mil to go from Yerushalayim to the first sukkah, and then another male to go from sukkah 1 to sukkah 2, and that will simply extend for the next 10 sukkahs until you get to the 10th sukkah. And that way, every person who's stationed at a sukkah can walk him, the Ishiti, to the next sukkah. Because again, you have that ability to walk 1 mil in every direction. And so therefore, basically now, he will be escorted all the way to the end. Well, not all the way to the end, almost to the end. Now, when you get to the last sukkah, chutz mi'acharon shebehem, the Mishnah goes on to describe, shinu magia imo latzuk. He doesn't walk with him all the way to the tzuk, all the way to the edge.
The people who were in the sukkah, they were the same for the entire Yom Kippur.
That was their Yom Kippur. In other words, everyone had a job. Everyone had a particular job. So for this group of people by the sukkah, their job was going to be to escort the Ishiti. So their Yom Kippur meant Yom Kippur at the sukkah. And then everyone obviously was assigned a different sukkah to stay at. Ela omen merachok. But rather they would stay at a distance. The roa esmasav. And they would witness what they're witnessing. Now how come they didn't escort them all the way to the edge? Was this a private moment for the Kohen, or I was going to say the Kohen, it really could be anybody. But was it a private moment for the Ishiti where he can't be accompanied by somebody? It was like the Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim where it can't be accompanied? So Rashi says, no, that's not the issue. The issue was a pragmatic issue. A halachic issue. And the reason why he wasn't escorted all the way to the edge is simply because for the last person, the last sukkah, he ran out of room, halachic room. He couldn't walk anymore. If you take a look at that Rashi, the long Rashi. Rashi says, starting from the second line in Rashi's, Rashi says, "Hareh l'tishem rizyud beis mil v'heim yud alf masaos." So Rashi says that the yud beis mil, the 12 mil that went from Yerushalayim to all the way to the tzuk, to the edge of the cliff, was 11 stations. Yerushalayim l'tzuk harishon masa echad. So one masa, one escort, went from Yerushalayim to the first sukkah. Umisukkah l'tzukkah ad yud sukkos. Tisha Masos. So you have now 10 sukkahs, so that means that there were nine in-betweens, between all 10 sukkahs. Hare Yud Masos. So now that gets you Yud Masos. That was 10 escorts. That's 10 mil from Yerushalayim to the last sukkah. Umisukkah achron otzuk masa echad. Now, to go from the 10th sukkah out to the tzuk, so that's now one more journey. But this journey, however, was a journey of 2 mil. Now the problem is, the person stationed at the last sukkah can only walk 1 mil. So Rashi says exactly. It was that last one, which was 2 mil, to get from the last sukkah to the cliff. Hainu diktani, and Rashi says, and now you understand the Mishnah. Malavan oso misukkah l'sukkah, shehamil hu tchum Shabbos. Because again, everyone can only walk 1 mil on Shabbos, chutz me and on Yom Kippur, chutz me acharon shu rachuk beiz milin. So Rashi explains, except for the last one, where the distance, the total distance, was 2 mil from the 10th sukkah to the cliff. Omalaveu mil. So the person stationed at sukkah number 10, so he escorted for 1 mil. The omen merachuk veros masav, and he stood at the edge and he watched what was going on. That's how Rashi explains why it is that the people stationed in that 10th sukkah was only able to walk in a mil. It was a halachic issue. And then, by the way, the continuation of Rashi, I'm not going to do now, but Rashi quotes a number of piyutim that were composed by Rebbe Elazar HaKalir, and Rashi basically says his math was a little bit off, and you'll take a look at the rest of Rashi on your own, and you'll see where Rashi does not appreciate the math of Rebbe Elazar HaKalir. But, okay. No. Going into every Shabbos and every Yom Kippur, you're only given one Makom Shvisa. So for the people who were stationed there, so they got that one Makom Shvisa. So in other words, if you were stationed at Sukkah number 4, that's it. Your Sukkah was number 1. Now an Erev Tchum can extend, but only one extension, and in only one direction. So no, you can't. You only get one makom shvisa. The first one's 1,000. So technically, right? The people in Yerushalayim could take him to sukkah number 1, and then that means that people at sukkah number 2 can walk to sukkah number 1. So the people stationed sukkah number 1, you know, they weren't necessary, but I guess it was. a system that was set, and so everyone stand in the sukkah. Tan Rabbanan, the Gemara here quotes a brisa. Now our Mishnah gives a very simple picture and one picture of what happened. The brisa over here is going to give us three different pictures. So because the three different opinions mentioned in the brisa. Number one, Esu sukkos v'shtemos namilam hayu divrei Rabbi Meir. That wasn't my intention. In other words, I just jumped to the Gemara because I just missed the rest of the Mishnah. But I really appreciate you pointing that out. Because now I'm going to go back. and you did it nicely. I really like that. Thank you. No, it's okay. I'm not following. That's the problem. So Ella Oman Mirachov Viroz Masav. Maha Yaose Cholek Lashon Shel Zaharis. So he would take the Lashon Shel Zaharis. Okay, you recall we discussed the Lashon Shel Zaharis, what seems to be now ages ago, although it wasn't ages ago. It was just whatever. We talked about the weight and how much it cost, and okay, but anyway. The red strip of wool. And he would split it and break in half. Chetziv kasher b'sela, one half he would tie to a rock that was at the edge of the cliff. V'chetziv kasher ben shnei karnav, and the other half he would tie to the horns of the goat. V'dachfol la'achol rav, and he pushed the goat backwards, so that the goat would fall now while facing you. So, if, in other words, from the perspective of the ishiti, you'd be face to face with the goat as you're pushing him off. And he would roll. He wouldn't even make it halfway down the edge of the cliff until he was torn into limbs. You can't really ask me. I mean, you can, but I understand that. But my experience with this is about the same number of experiences that you've had with this. So you can't. And so now what does he do? He goes to the sukkah achrona until techshach, until it gets dark. And that's how he spends the rest of his Yom Kippur. Now, tumas begadim. Right? The Torah says that the one who sends them out is metame begadim. So at what point does he become tame? Yes, it's one of those occasions in halacha where you're doing a mitzvah, and by doing the mitzvah you become tame. Okay? That's just simply how it works sometimes. So Mishiyes Echus Echomas Yerushalayim, so that in the moment that he leaves the walls of Yerushalayim, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shad Dichi Yasso Latsuk, and Rabbi Shimon disagrees, Rabbi Shimon says no, the moment that he pushes him off the cliff. Okay. Now, let's start with the Gemara. The Gemara is going to give us three pictures of what exactly happened. Tan Rabbanan Esra Sukkos Rishalayim Rasam Milam Hayu Divir Rabbi Meir says, a total of 10 sukkos and a total distance of 12 mil. Should sound familiar, that's exactly how we described in our Mishnah. It works out well because usually Stam Mishnah Karebi Meir. Okay, so here it works out nicely. Our Mishnah is going like Rebbe Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Teisha Sukkos V'Asara Milan. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no, there were 9 sukkos and a total of 10 mil. Now again, this is one of those strange instances where we seem to be having a machlokas over Metzias, over the reality of the total distance there was from Yerushalayim until the edge of the cliff. There's got to be a more lumdish way to explain it, although I don't know what the more lumdish way to explain it is. But it does seem at face value that they're having a machlokas over what the reality was. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Chamish Sukkos V'Asara Milan Hayum. So Rabbi Yossi says, 5 sukkos, 10 mil. Not changing the total distance between Yerushalayim and the edge of the cliff, it's 10 mil, but changing the number of sukkos. Because you could really get away with only having 5 sukkos, and you could do it, escort the ishit from Yerushalayim to the edge, and you could do it with only 5 sukkos. V'kulna yidei erev, and you do it with an erev tchum. Now, as Rashi points out, and I made the point earlier, but so what? I mean, it's more important that Rashi makes it. Rashi makes the point that at each sukkah you have multiple people stationed over there. That way, you can have at one sukkah someone going to the east a total of 4,000 amas, or 2 mil. And how is he going to do that? Because what for him, the sukkah will be the edge of his tchum. By making an erev tchum, he's able to go walk 1 mil in the eastern direction. And because now he set up his erev tchum, he's allowed to walk now another mil. So that will give him the latitude, the ability to walk 4,000 amas, 2 mil. Let's just talk in mil, that's easier. It's able to walk 2 mil in the eastern direction. And another group stationed at the same sukkah will make an erev tchum to the west. And that will allow them to walk 2 mil in the western direction. So basically now you can, making up an Erev Tchum, you really have a lot of room to negotiate and to move around.
Question.
Just give me one moment. I'm a Rav Yossi Sachli Elazar Bani. So Rav Yossi says, you know, my son Elazar, so he would tell me, Imal Yidei Erev Yichon Lasov Safilu Shtei Sukkos V'Asara Milen. He says, you know, if you really think this through, I can make two sukkos and cover the total distance of 10 mil. Because think about it. In other words, you don't need the escorts at the sukkah to get to the other sukkah. All you need the escorts to do is just simply get to the other escorts. In other words, if you will, I know this is not a visual medium for some of you, but if you will, in other words, you have one here and one here, Ayidei Tchum, the person over here can go 1 mil, 1 mil. And then the people over here, Ayidei Tchum, can go 1 mil, 1 mil. So now I can cover from one sukkah to another with escorts the entire way, a total of 4 mil. So Rebbe Lazar says to his father, Rebbe Yossi, you know, I can now, with what we just described, I can make two sukkahs and we can cover the totality of 10 mil.
The whole principle behind Eretz Yisrael was that it had to be food that was accessible to you and it was edible.
Well,
how could you
not just, no, this is not just food. This is also for the purpose of escorting.
I understand that, but the whole principle to use it to was the idea that you said the food and it had to be edible.
Oh. Right.
Yom Kippur, you cannot eat it.
Okay.
How could I establish the food?
But that's, I hear you. I hear you, but the food is edible. It's just that you can't eat it.
I
hear you, but a chola can eat it. I'm just thinking on my feet right now. I'll give you an example. The Mishnah Erevin says that, let's say I use truma, right, as my tchum. The Mishnah says that works.
Right?
And a Nazir uses Yayin, and the Mishnah says that works. And the reason why it works is because you can't eat it, but somebody can eat it. There's no Isser in the food itself. It just happens to be that in Yom Kippur, the Torah tells me I can't eat it. But the food itself is fine. No, but they're sukkah, right, but again, according to Rabbi Meir in our Mishnah, there's no Erev Tchum. Okay, right. But the Gemara is pointing out that if you use Erev Tchum, you really can extend. And so that means that you could space the sukkahs out further away from one another. To the point where Rabbi Lazar brought it to its logical conclusion, where really, if I have a sukkah over here and a sukkah over here, and I use Erev Tchum, so I can cover in between them a total of 4,000 amos.
But the food.
And the footnote here, it says that if he was really needed to eat,
right.
Well, we'll get to that. That's coming. We haven't gotten to that point yet.
The other thing is that with this, meantime, for this guy who's walking the goat, there's no concept of home. He's just walking way beyond it.
Yeah, that, I pointed that earlier.
But the question is,
is that aser dochelot aser? That's ishiti. The Torah says that he's
mecha. That's the mitzvah.
Good. That's for him. But everybody. That's a doraisa. The Gemara yesterday's daf said ishiti. Ishiti afilu b'Shabbos, meaning to get the goat off the cliff, he's going to have to violate Shabbos, but that's fine. Ah, that's a good question. I didn't discuss that yesterday, nor did I discuss it today until you asked. But now that you asked, the going 2,000 amos beyond tchum is an issur d'rabbanan. However, there's a long discussion, not in the Gemara actually, it's amongst the Rishonim, of what about 12 mil. So according to some Rishonim, right? According to some Rishonim, walking 12 mil on Shabbos and I guess Yom Kippur, as well as an Issur D'Oraisa. So it could be that walking 12 mil is an Issur D'Oraisa. Could be. That's a debate amongst the Rishonim. To machlok between the Rambam and the Ramban, if I remember correctly. Anyway, back to the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar Milo, sorry. So La'aso Safilu Shtei Sukkos V'Asara Milan. So two sukkahs and 10 mil. The Gemara says, what about the Braisa? The Braisa says, the last person only escorted him 1 mil and was not able to accompany him that last mil. So the Gemara says to Rebbe Meir, okay, that's going like Rebbe Meir. Remember, Rebbe Meir has the 10 sukkahs spaced out and there was no tchum that was used. There was no Erev tchum that was used. So basically everyone only walked 1 mil and that was it. And so therefore, for that last 2 mil, so one of them was escorted and one of them was unescorted. Never needed it, said the Braisa. The person was able to walk 12 kilometers on Yom Kippur and did not need the water, did not need the food. Gemara here employs a famous line, famous because I know it, but the Gemara employs a famous line that you can't compare someone with bread in the basket when someone does not have bread in the basket. Dainu, that means to say that the when you have a security blanket, a security pillow, so basically you're comforted by that, and even if you don't need it, even if you're not going to use it, the mere fact that you have it emboldens you, strengthens you. And so the Gemara says, that's the pas pasala, that's bread in the basket. So in other words, the idea that he can have the food, it empowers him and emboldens him, it basically, it allows him to continue, even without actually using the food. So the Gemara says, now, why are we splitting the red strip of wool into two pieces, tying one to the goat and one to the rock? What's the purpose of that? The Gemara wants to know, why not just simply tie the entire strip of red wool to the rock? But I understand the strip of red wool has to go down the cliff together with the goat. What's the point? So came in the mitzvah of Seir. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is that we have a mitzvah to do, which is to throw the goat off the cliff. That's a mitzvah. And Dilma Kadam Omalbin Umiyasve Daite. So the Gemara says, then the problem is going to be that the strip of red wool may turn white before we throw the goat off the cliff. And the Ishiti is now looking at the strip of red wool. Oh, it's white? We're good. Okay, we can all go home. I can go home now. Actually, not home. I can go back to the 10th sukkah and now spend the rest. In other words, we're good. Right? Because isn't the whole point of throwing the goat off the cliff so that we'll expunge the sins of the Jewish people? And I'm looking at the wool and it's now white and we're good. And he'll just ignore the fact that he has a mitzvah to do. And there may be a purpose to the mitzvah, but don't overthink it. In other words, the point is that there's a mitzvah to do. Do the mitzvah. V'naktri kula ben karanav. So the Gemara says, okay, but why not tie the entire strip of red wool to the goat? So the Gemara says, zimma degamish le'lereisha v'lavadayte. Well, the Gemara says, well, sometimes the position of the goat is that he bends his head down, and you just simply won't be able to see the strip of red wool, and then you wouldn't even notice. So therefore, tie half to the head of the goat, so that way you're focused on the goat, realizing you still have a mitzvah to do. Tie the other half to the rock, so that if and when the red turns white, you'll know and you'll see. Tana Rabbanan Brishon, ayu koshin lashon shel zahoris al pesach ha'ulam. This brisa may sound familiar. We've seen this brisa before. At least I think we have. Or we referenced it before. Originally, we would tie the strip of red wool to the entrance of the ulam, meaning the red wool actually never even went out with the goat. Stayed in the base of Mikdash, at the entrance of the ulam, which was the antechamber to the base of Mikdash. Mi b'chutz, in fact, it was tied on the outside. But hilbin, hayu smeichin, lo hilbin, hayu atzavin. But then that let everybody know whether or not the red turned white. And if the red turned white, so that was joy, cause for joy. But if the red did not turn white, so everyone that ended off Yom Kippur in a real downer. Mizbaishin, and of course everybody would be embarrassed. Hitkinushu kosher na pesach ula mibifnim. So then the Chachamim said, okay, let's not make it public. Let's keep this information private. So they would keep the red wool on the inside of the ulam. Vadaino you mitzitzin veroin. But people would peek because we're curious. Rabbi just spoke about that, and this week we're curious. Hilben hayu smechen lo hilben hayu atzavim. And if it turned white, we were happy. And if it did not turn white, we were sad and embarrassed. Hitzkinushu koshen oso chetiv besela vechetiv ben koranav. So then eventually the takana came where the red wool would be tied, would be split into two pieces, half of it would be kept to the goat, and half of it would be tied to the rock. So the Gemara gives us a little bit more like of a, here's a story behind the story of how we got to this position, where we're taking the red wool together with the Ishiti, and tying it half to the goat and half to the rock. I'm Rav Nachman, Rav Papa, Mishim, Rav Elazar, Kafar, Bishon, Ayu, Koshin, Lashon, Shazor, Yisrael, Pesach, Ulam, Mibifnim. Slightly different version of what exactly happened. Originally was tied on the inside of the Ulam. It came, Shehigia, Seir, Lamidbar. And once the goat got to the desert, Hayomabin, Viyadushanas is mitzvah so. And once the goat got to the point, so that was basically a way of telling us, meaning those of us who were by the base of Mikdash, mitzvah has been accomplished in Emar, im yuchateichem kashanim, kashelag yalbinu. The Gemara turns its attention now to a halachic discussion, and that is the goat. The goat has kedusha, imbued with kedusha. Okay, is it a carbon? As I pointed out a number of times, it's hard to wrap our head around exactly what it is. The Gemara just the other day mentioned that the throwing off the cliff is ki'ilu shchita. It's like we shechted the animal. Now, we can't call it a carbon. It's not in the Beis HaMikdash. And if we called it a carbon, that would be a violation of Shechut Echutz. In fact, the Gemara just a couple days ago also mentioned that if I did shech the Shtila Azazel outside the Beis HaMikdash, I am not in violation of Shechut Echutz. After the Hagrola. That's correct. So it's not. So let's not call it a carbon, but it has Kedusha. It's imbued with Kedusha. That little we could say. And we have to say that, quite frankly, because it's purchased with the Truma Salishka money. So it's imbued with Kedusha. So therefore, it seems that it's imbued with Kedusha, so there's an Isser Hana. I can't get benefit from it. It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. That's clear. The question on the table becomes the following. After I throw it off over the cliff, now the mitzvah's done. I perform the mitzvah. Does the Kedusha kind of dissipate? Can somebody pick up the limbs and get benefit from the limbs? Now, what kind of benefit are we talking about? I mean, obviously you can't eat it. That's not up for discussion. But give it to your... It's a novella. Give it to your dog. Let your dog eat it. Okay, use the... Whatever. Use the forbidden... Use the chalev as a bar of soap. Okay, in other words, we could be creative. So the question is plain and simple. Can I get benefit from the limbs after it's been thrown over the cliff? So the Gemara brings a machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Chad amar mutarin v'chad amar asurin. Okay, so your two positions are either it's mutar b'ana or asur b'ana. Man damar mutarim, top of Samach Zayim and Beis, dechsiv b'amidbar. So why should it be mutar b'ana? So the Torah says, the Gemara argues, because the Torah, when describing it, says, take it out to the desert. And as Rashi points out, first Rashi on the Amud, shlachas asir b'amidbar v'kra yiserahu l'midre she'ei hefker k'midbar. Once out in the desert, it becomes hefker, just like the desert's hefker. So that means hefker means it's owned by nobody. Anybody's entitled to it. It's no longer asur b'ana. So umanda amar asur and dichsiv gzeira. On the other hand, we can go in the other direction. The Torah says they take it to Eretz gzeira. Now gzeira, what does the word gzeira indicate? Rashi explains chomer and isser. Anytime you say it's a gzeira, right? We say what do we say? Gzeira de rabbanan. What does that mean? It means that the rabbis instituted a stringency, for obviously for legitimate reason. But the word gzeira means something which is stringent. And if the Torah is describing the Seir Mishtaleach as gzeira, Eretz gzeira, so it means chomer, iser, it's aser. Man damar asur and haim midbar mayavid lay. Now, the ping pong game that we normally play in the Gemara. Now, what are we going to do with the, if you're an oser, so what do you do with the word midbar? So midbar l'rabbas novigivon shilo beis olamim. Three times the Torah says the word midbar to tell us that the mitzvah of Seir Mishlech applies for all forms of Beis HaMikdash. For novigivon, the temporary Beis HaMikdash between Shilo and the Beis HaMikdash. For Shilo, 369 years, there was a quote-unquote a Beis HaMikdash, a Beis HaBechira, if you will, in the city of Shiloh, right, from when Yehoshua entered into Eretz Yisrael until Shlomo HaMelech, or a little bit before Shlomo HaMelech, and finally Beis Olam, and that's referring to the Beis HaMikdash.
What about the Mishkan?
So why the Gemara doesn't mention Mishkan over here is a good question. I don't know. I was thinking the same thing. V'idah chai gzer ma'avid lei. Now the Gemara says now, what, if you're of the Heter camp, so what do you do with the word gzera? So mi baile lechetetanya gzera and gzera ella chatucha. Gzera means it's got to be cut. Now what exactly does that mean in this context? So if you take a look at Rashi, Rashi writes soak chatuf bizikifa v'lo meshupako kach. You need a cliff with basically with a drop, right? And you don't want like a little hill and have it like roll down the hill. That's not what you're interested in. You're interested in a cliff with a drop, so that the goat really will fall to its death. Another possibility of understanding gazer is mitgazer v'yared. Rashi hasir mitgazer ba'ivarim avarim. It will be cut up into pieces. So I want to clip the cliff that has a drop and also is very sharp. So it really, in other words, not a soft ground, but like bedrock, like something that will really cut it up. Gzera
mean cut in
the remain? Yeah. Davar acher tohu. Now gzera, one other way to understand the word gzera, you'll say to yourself, this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. Where we're going to throw a goat off the cliff. Uh-huh. And the sins will be expunged. Mm-hmm, sure. So the and to Shema Tomer, maybe you'll say Maisa Tohu. Maybe you'll say that this is crazy. Well, what are we doing? Tamalomar Ani Hashem. The Pasuk saying Ani Hashem, right, the a little bit later in Chumash, right? Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Dalet. But anyway, the Pasuk saying a little bit later says no. In other words, this is Gzera means you do it. Okay? And don't overthink it. That's exactly how the Gemara says it. Kadosh Baruch Hu was goes there. Don't think it. Don't think it through too much. Meaning, just do it because it's a mitzvah. Amar Rav Mistaber Kaman Amar Mutar Lo Amar Torah Shalech LeTakala. Rav says, if I had a vote, I would say it's more logical to say that once the limbs are on the bottom of the cliff, it's Mutar Bahana. Whoever adopts that viewpoint. By the way, the Gemara didn't tell us who. The Gemara told us who the principal arguers are, Rav and Shmuel, but we didn't get to see who argued what. And usually when it comes to Issur V'Heter, the halacha falls like Rav. So I would say the halacha falls like Rav. The problem is, of course, is we don't know which one Rav says. Anyway, the Gemara says, Rav says, if I had a vote, Rav, of course, was in a later Amora. He came after Rav and Shmuel, but he says, if I had a vote, I would say that it's Mutter. Why? The argument would be, Lo Amar Torah Shilech L'Tekala. Because you're sending off the goat off the cliff, litakala. In other words, it's going to, right, somebody's going to pick up the pieces and walk away with Isser in his hands. The Torah wouldn't do that. The Gemara has a very similar discussion in Kedushin. You see on the side of the Gemara, Kedushin in Zion. The Gemara has a very similar discussion regarding the Tziporim, the birds. You know what I'm talking about? Tahara Samitzora, I know it's come up a lot recently in the Daf. Tahara Samitzora, the first day of the Tahara, the process of the Mitzora, is that there are two birds that are involved. One bird is going to be killed and the other bird is going to be sent free. The Gemara in Kedushin has a discussion, that bird that's sent free, is it Aser Bahana or is it Mutar Bahana? And one of the arguments the Gemara makes over there, it's got to be Mutar Bahana, because I can't envision the Torah telling us, take this bird that's Aser Bahana and let it go free. And someone else is going to pick it up and violate the Isra of Me'ilah, it's hard to imagine. So the Gemara, that was the argument over there in Kedushin. So over here, the Gemara is employing basically a very similar argument. Rava is, I can't imagine that the goat's now on the bottom of the cliff and all those limbs are Asabana, and someone's going to come along and knowingly pick it up and use it? Can't imagine. Tana Rabbanan Azazel She'az V'kasheh. Well, the word Azazel gives off a sense of it's hard. Right, the word az for sure, I mean, there you don't need any drush. That you get pretty clearly. Yachol b'yishuv tamalomba b'amidbar. And not in an occupied area. You got to go out to the desert. Minayin shebitzuk. And how do I know they have to go off the edge of a cliff? Tamalomba gzera. The word gzera, like we mentioned earlier, sharp. Tanyidich, we have another drusha. Azazel kashesha b'harim. V'cheinu omer v'et eilei ha'aretz lakach. The word elim means strong. Yesh el biyadi. Right, by Lavan. So the word elim means strong. Tana de Rav Yishmael, and that comes, I'm sorry, let me just connect it. Azazel, you hear the end of the word? The word el that comes up at the end? So it's strong. Although I know it's missing the aleph, but okay. So Tana de Rav Yishmael, Azazel shemechaper amaisa uza va'azel. Another direction that we can go in terms of Azazel, explains the Braisa, the Academy of Rabbi Yishmael, is Maisa Uzav Azazel. Anyone know what's going on over here? Before Rashi, I did not. Rashi says, Uzav Azazel, Malachi Chaval Shiardu Laretz Bimei Na'ama, Achos Tuval Kayin. We're going back into earlier days in creation. We're going back to the generation of Tuval Kayin. Right, where you had Malachi Chavala, I can only explain this so far. But basically, not angels. Whatever. Okay. Angelic creatures coming down. V'aleim ne'amar v'yiru b'nei Elokim es... Or, okay, I'm not sure how to go here. V'yiru b'nei Elokim es b'nosa Adam. And remember at the end of Parshas Bereishis, the B'nei Elokim saw the daughters, right, got lured, and they performed arayas. And basically, the way that Gemara is understanding now Azazel is it's a kapara for the acts of Uzzah and Azazel. It's a kapara for arayas. Okay, let's do one more and we'll stop. Tan Rabbanan Ishmatai Ta'asu Dvarim Shem Alein Nichtavu Dinu Shichtavu. Basically the compartmentalization of the mitzvahs and the Torah into things that quote unquote make sense and things that quote unquote do not make sense. For example, Avodas Kochavim Gilu Arayos Shvichas Damim Gezel Birchas Hashem. So they all make sense. Okay, again, assuming that there's a God, which let's go in that direction. So the Avodas Zarah Gilu Arayos Shvichas Damim. Gezel, stealing, Birchas Hashem, blasphemy. Those are all things which are logical. I mean, those are all things that we would... And by the way, these are all Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Right. Es Chuko Sait, not all of them. Not all, but a lot, right? Everything we just mentioned is in the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Es Chuko Sait, Tishmar V'dvarim Sheh Satan Meshiv Aleim. And then there are things which don't make sense to us, and the Satan and our Yetzirah gets the attack. Achilas chazir, don't eat pig. What's wrong with pig? Levisha shanis, don't eat wool and linen. I can't imagine why not. Chalitzas yavama, the mitzvah of chalitza. There's no logic. Taharas, by the way, it's interesting. What isn't mentioned? Yibum. Yibum is logical, right? Everyone follow? The Ramban and Chumash. Take a look; it's very interesting. And in Parshas Vayeshev.
Maybe it is talking about prohibition.
Anyway, Taras Mitzora v'Sira Mishtaleach, the purification of the Mitzora, right? The process which we point out a number of times. It just there's no logic, but just simply how it works. Sira Mishtaleach. Shema Torah Ma'isetohuim Tam Lamar Ani Hashem Ani Hashem Chakakti Ve'en Lachavrushus LaHarabahem. The Ani Hashem that follows up with these mitzvos is basically Kadosh Baruch Hu saying, look, I know it doesn't conform to your logic. You don't have a way of reasoning and rationale and making rational these types of mitzvahs. Doesn't matter. Ani Hashem. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I was goes there, and then you do them, and that's it, and that's the end of the discussion. Okay. All right, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. We've almost got to where we should be. Okay, today, an entire discussion today about Ishiti and his trek out into the desert.